Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria. I am Andrea Barstorff-Hager, and my guest today is Ashika Gunasena, the CEO of Chrysalis, the local organization that evolved from Care Sri Lanka. And Ashika is now a powerful force for women's leadership, inclusion, and locally led development. And about all that, we will talk in our podcast. But dear listeners and appreciated fans of Care in Action podcast, I'm sure that you have heard on the news about the tragic situation and the massive flooding in South Asia. And I'm also very sure that you have seen that also Sri Lanka is heavily affected. So in this podcast, we will mainly talk in the first part about the current situation, and then we do a short summary of what Chrysalis and Care in Sri Lanka is doing. But first of all, let me express a very warm welcome to my colleague Ashika, that even in these emergency times, she takes some minutes for our podcast. Welcome, Ashika.
Thank you so much, Andrea, for having me. Thank you so much, even under these difficult circumstances, to have me talk to you. Thank you so much.
And let's get started with the flooding and the heavy rains that have been ongoing for quite some time, right? Because in our news, it was really escalated a few days ago. So we heard here and there bits and pieces that there are heavy rains in Thailand, heavy rains in Sri Lanka. But as a massive emergency, like it is evolving now from Indonesia to parts of India, if I'm correct, evolved for us here in Europe the last two or three days only. So can you, from where you sit, you are based in Sri Lanka, can you share with us what it is like and when it has started and why?
Yes. So we've been having rain, I would say, since about the 25th of November. So the rain sort of gradually increased. And on the 28th of November, really, that the storm really came over Sri Lanka. And this is a cyclone, I would say. It's a cyclone, and it severely impacted Sri Lanka. I would say the entire country was severely impacted by the rain. And then until the storm left Sri Lanka, we had incessant rain. And with that, large amount of water, as you can imagine, and the flooding. So no part of the country was spared. Perhaps maybe the very southern tip of the country didn't get much rain, but the rest of the country was impacted heavily. And we have, of the 25 districts that Sri Lanka is made up of, almost 18 have been severely impacted. And what I mean by severely impacted, it's more than the flooding, it's also landslides. So if you know Sri Lanka's geography, we have a lot of rocks and mountains in the middle of the country. So many of the mountains and have got given away, and we have had many, many landslides as well. And Sri Lanka also has a lot of man-made and artificial lakes and rivers, which we are very proud of, and it's very beautiful usually, and sustain farmers and families. But all of those agricultural lakes and rivers have begun to overflow. So even when the rain moved away, we had massive flooding because of these irrigation tanks, as well as our waterways overflowing. So that has really impacted. Right now, I would say nearly 1.5 million people. We are recording about 1,000 plus deaths, but we believe that that number will be very much more, because they're still trying to find people. And what has been really sad, Andrea, is that entire communities have been washed away, and we see villages entirely gone. And for us, it's very, very sad, especially because most of the areas where we work in as chrysalis have been impacted very, very severely. So even now, there are a lot of rescue missions. People are being rescued from isolated areas. There are certain places where we cannot access even now. So they are dropping food and supplies to these families. But fortunately, the rain has now stopped, but the flooding is still continuing in some parts of the country. So those are the areas that need a lot of the support. But in areas where the rain has stopped, the road access is becoming very difficult. So we are still trying to get relief supplies to those most isolated places. I think for us, because we have been on the ground in these districts, we have teams, so we were able to very quickly respond. And I Chrysalis is one of the first responders, and we worked with government, and we worked with our partners and our community leaders to immediately understand what was required. So cooked food, dry rations, shelter materials, hygiene kits, and particularly for women requiring shelter kits and sanitation packages. So those are things that we are doing currently. But despite all that, I would say what's been truly marvelous about Sri Lankans is the fact that we all come together. So every person in their best capacity even packs up a bit of food and share it with their neighbors. So, I mean, in reflection, I mean, we've had so many crises over the last many years. We've had COVID, then we had a terrorist attack, the Easter Sunday attacks, then we had an economic crisis. And we were just coming out of that economic crisis, and this happened. But what's been really hopeful, and I think this is something, you know, as a Sri Lankan, we feel just so, so proud that everyone just does come together. Of course, the destruction is massive. The infrastructure, the loss to livelihoods and incomes. And we work particularly with small businesses, particularly managed by women. And we will see that many of the businesses will take a long time to recover. So we are really looking at a protracted response. So right now the emergency work is still ongoing, but we are looking at a very protracted recovery and, of course, reconstruction. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit of our story. And as I said, Chrysalis has reached nearly 10,000 people already because we have staff on the ground, and we've received some funding from CARE, and we are receiving funding from some donors locally based. So we are able to respond. And I have to also say that, you know, our team, it's just fantastic. I mean, they have been affected themselves, but they're just incredible, Andrea. Really, truly, truly incredible to have a great team who can really go out there and respond and do it well, and do it well as well, because there's so much support coming in. It's not very well coordinated. The government is also struggling. So to really even provide not only relief, but, you know, in terms of really organizing distributions and making sure that certain standards are met. So we are really happy that we are on the ground.
So this is so, so moving and so touching for me to listen to you, Ashika. And I can assure you that that CARE and CARE Austria will do the utmost that we can to also support this emergency in Sri Lanka. We will talk about that apart from this podcast. So I think this is the first podcast out of more than 120 episodes that we are talking directly to a leader of a local organization, an offspring of CARE Sri Lanka. So we feel very connected, CARE and Chrysalis, in the midst of an emergency. So to put it into a bit of perspective for our listeners sitting here in Europe or wherever you listen to us, the total population of Sri Lanka is what?
Total population is 21 million people.
Okay.
Andrea, yes, 21 million.
Still, it is a lot that 1.5 million people are affected by this cyclone. And you mentioned, and I had the privilege to spend more than 3 weeks privately in Sri Lanka many years ago. And it is a beautiful and green island, like you described it. And the best tea in the world is produced there, I would say. Yes. So far, I have never tasted better. But of course, the landsliding is something that can impact massively the life, especially of the rural population, because you have many mountains and hills. And if everything is wet and not stable enough, then massive landslides are also killing people and also livelihood, of course. So the impact is massive. You have mentioned that Sri Lanka went through so many crises the last years that one that it's difficult for outsiders to remember them all. But you also said that the resilience of the people is very impressive. And we hear it now from Sri Lanka, that this is a phenomena that is really a global one, that in times, and we don't need this massive crisis, please don't misunderstand me or my colleague, but in times of massive impact, of massive emergency, it is, from my point of view, a global phenomena that people stand together and help each other. And it is a bit remarkable that a few days ago, we had the 80th birthday of CARE, which is a really iconic day for people in Austria, because our own people in the aftermath of World War II were helped with the famous CARE packages. And more than a million people in Austria have received, in many cases, a life-saving CARE package. And as we are speaking, people in Sri Lanka get a sort of CARE package. The CARE package is still alive because Ashika told us what people need most. And this is a good lesson for all of you who never had the experience of being in a real emergency. What you need first is clean water. In spite of the fact that everything is flooded, you need clean water because there are many waterborne diseases. And you have to avoid that people are drinking what is available. You need, and you mentioned it, warm food. It's really key that the food is cooked and not something just. And this is really where people join forces and provide food to the people affected. You need shelter. You need dry clothes. Because imagine if everything was or is flooded. And in Austria, we have many regions, also in Germany and many neighboring countries, where flooding is quite common. And of course, this is also an impact of the climatic changes that we see globally. One can say that. Is it the rainy season now in Sri Lanka? I think so.
It is. It is the monsoon season. So we would have expected rains to come during this time. But of course, we did not expect a monsoon or a cyclone to come. So the rain, so our lives and many people's lives are really built around the rain, because many families are still dependent on agriculture. So this rain was expected. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, of course, as you said very correctly, Andrea, climate change has also meant that the rain patterns have changed severely. So when people need rain, it doesn't come. Or mm-hmm. when the rain does come, it's too much. Mm-hmm. Because as we grow paddy, our staple food is rice. So for rice cultivation, many farmers are dependent on rain. Of course, we have a great irrigation infrastructure as well, but still the poorest of the farmers do depend on the water for them to grow the paddy or any other crops that they grow and then, of course, sell. So you are very correct about climate change impacting Sri Lanka. And in fact, Sri Lanka is one of the countries that has severely impacted by climate change, because apart from the rain, we also have periods of drought. Mm-hmm. So it's almost cyclic. You know, you have drought and then you have floods. So we also have been really working with communities to help communities understand the impacts of climate change and what we must do to really prepare ourselves, and also working with governments and even private sector organizations to really come in and support, let's say, small farmers, but also small business owners who are primarily women, who are really not secure. So a small climatic event like this can wipe out their business. So we are getting many, many calls from women who ran just really great businesses. They were employing 2 to 3 people or even more than that, you know, got small garment factories, small spice factories, you know. So many of them have been severely impacted. So in many ways, this event can also be used to really rebuild and help communities and government and others understand the importance of really planning ahead and planning for such climate events. So so our next phases, we will be really thinking about that and enabling communities to become a lot more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Which is the buzzword somehow, right? Because yeah, exactly. What I wanted to ask you is, did people in Sri Lanka know that the cyclone is approaching? Were they prepared? Were they warned?
We knew it was coming, but nobody expected the severity that we've experienced.
Okay. So the but dimension was much bigger. Yeah,
much, much bigger. We could have done more to really warn people to get onto higher ground. And even, as I said, a lot of the reservoirs that we have built as part of our irrigation agriculture and also as part of our hydroelectric infrastructure. So some things could have happened in order to kind of save communities from the floods. But it was not quick enough, Andrea, I think.
Okay.
So these are the things that we really have to think about. I mean, the warnings did come. Nobody expected it to be this severe. But there are still steps that we could have taken as a country to prepare better. Yeah.
And I think also the severity, even if you are warned, it is in the human being somehow that we don't imagine firsthand the worst case. A cyclone, yes, strong winds, but that this wind can kill you and wipe out whole communities and villages, as you described it, this is nothing what comes to mind. What comes to mind first? We are talking a lot about the usage of new technologies now, inside and outside care. And from what you shared with us, I would assume that warnings were there, yes, but not early enough and also not encouraging enough that people really leave their homes and go to higher points on the island, which might not also have been a good idea. In the case of landslide, it's also very dangerous. Yep. So in a small, relatively small island like Sri Lanka, it might be. There are different layers of complexity, but it's a bit similar to Haiti, I would say, because when you go up the mountain and the landslide hits, then it can be even more damaging than without doing that. So I hear that there is a lot of room for improvement, for early warning systems, and also measurements that people have trained before the cyclone hits, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think it's even if the infrastructure is in place, the warnings do come, I think people also have to be really prepared to respond quickly. What we saw, and then, you know, it's I understand. I mean, you don't want to leave your home that you have built and you have spent. I mean, these are also, I mean, the impacts are disproportionate, right? So if you're from a poorer community or if you just rebuild, you built a house, you bought a small car. And, you know, so when someone says you need to leave your home, you always think, no, not this, it will not come to our house.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's also sort of that attachment and that, I mean, I can't understand. I mean, we understand how people must feel, but unless you've been impacted directly, it is hard to make these choices. These are not easy choices, but people did have to go, and many people did, so they saved their lives, and those who didn't really want to leave are the ones that lost their lives, but there were, as you said, there was no place to go as well. So that means that, so I think we need to really collectively, you know, in terms of that infrastructure, early warning, the awareness, and also some of the houses were built in places where it was not safe. Warnings were provided earlier on. So we need to also make sure that the policy in place also gets executed well, so that people's lives are not in danger.
You will believe it or not, but that houses are built only in very secure places and spots is even in so-called highly developed countries like Austria an issue, because we have landslide in the mountains, we have flooding sometimes, yeah, and it's also an existential threat, yeah. And people also here need help if emergency disaster hits like that. So I think that many of our listeners will find it quite familiar what you are sharing with us, in spite of the fact that, of course, the island of Sri Lanka is a different setting than the mountains in Central Europe. So bluntly asked, you need desperately help also from outside. Is that correct?
Yes. So we have an appeal out. And as I said, CARE came to us immediately. And that is the funding that we have been using. So I just want to say here as well, I think we truly appreciate that support. I mean, just that phone call is what we did. And we got the search fund. And with that, we were really able to be one of the first responders immediately. So we are, we have an appeal out from outside. And we also have, fortunately, Andrea, local people contributing, you know, whatever they can. We also had a lot of interest from diaspora, you know, Sri Lankans living outside who obviously have a very emotional connection to what's going on here. So we've had some support. So we will be looking for funding for now. Recovery will be hard. So we are also looking at really this phase, you know, we will be providing that relief and the early recovery, making sure everyone's safe. And then our next phase will be, I mean, we are looking at issues around health is going to be the immediate next aftermath. Then we are looking at agriculture infrastructure. We are looking at livelihoods. We are looking at small, medium enterprises. So we are at the moment really trying to understand what the next phase will look like. But we really haven't had been able to really sit and really strategize what that will be.
That's clear.
But that's what we're doing in the next few days.
You're still in an emergency phase. And what often is forgotten in the whole debate is that in most of the cases nowadays, you see protracted emergency. Because even if the water goes and if the people are buried and the survivors are living in tents and things like that, they are under massive existential threat. And this doesn't go away like the water goes away. And as you said, the destroyed infrastructure, this can take years in a country like Sri Lanka to rebuild it, and it has a massive impact on the whole economic performance and also on civil society. So the impact lasts for years, and this is very often forgotten in the whole debate about humanitarian aid. Yes, this is necessary for the first weeks, but what comes then is a burden as big as the emergency situation. And as we heard, 1.5 million people affected. This might even increase because not everything, not everybody is identified, not everybody is found yet. So the situation in Sri Lanka will be massively impacted for the next years. So I'm not reluctant to say, dear listeners, CARE has emergency appeals out for South Asia. If you listen to this podcast, please not only open your mind and heart, also open your bag and do a donation, please, if you can, for the flood victims in Sri Lanka and in South Asia. As I said before, CARE Austria definitely will contribute, but your donation enables us to contribute even a bigger a bigger contribution to the people so desperately in need. So we have heard already a lot that Chrysalis is doing and that you are focusing, and this is totally in alignment with care, mainly on women and girls. The income generation is a big issue, and participation in the economic sphere, of course. I hope that you are able to share that also a little bit with us, is how does it come that you are in this job? Because you are born and raised in Sri Lanka. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? Did you always have this appetite to help others, or how does it come?
I got into it by accident, actually, Andrea. I studied to be a neuroscientist, would you believe? I was born in Sri Lanka. I studied up to my secondary school in Sri Lanka. And there was a time in Sri Lanka where we had lots of political uprising. So when I was ready to go to university, that was maybe in 1988, a long time ago, it seems. My parents could afford to send me overseas. I was in Australia studying to be a neuroscientist, which is very, very, very strange now that I think about it. But then I came back to Sri Lanka because I always wanted to come home. I didn't want to live anywhere else. I came home, and all of the work that was available for me was, you know, in a lab, in a hospital, which I didn't really think would really suited me. And of course, by now I had spent all my parents' money going overseas. But someone known to me said, listen, until you figure things out, why not come and volunteer for us? Actually, at Caritas in Sri Lanka. So I volunteered for 3 months, which became 3 years. And then there was a job out from CARE in Sri Lanka for a design, monitoring and evaluation person. And I applied. I didn't think I would get it because I didn't really have the expertise or the experience, but it so happened they employed me, and the rest is history. And I was with CARE since then for 21 years. And
this
then,
is not shocking for me. This is not shocking for me. I started my 17th year with CARE now in November.
So it's a long time. And then when CARE transitioned its presence in Sri Lanka, I was happy to sort of look at that change process and then really establish Chrysalis as its affiliate in Sri Lanka. So, and Chrysalis is now also 10 years. By next year, we would have been in operation for 10 years. So so it's interesting. I never really planned to be in this sector, but once I was in the sector, it seemed that I didn't want to leave it. And this is what I love to do and what I have been doing for so many years now. Yeah.
Wow, Ashika, this is totally amazing. And I have to admit, this is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about podcasting, because I really get to know my colleagues much better than I would ever have had, because we have known each other forever, I would say. And you never told me actually that you're a neuroscientist.
Oh, yeah.
And it needed the podcast Care in Action to find out how it all started. That's really a liaison building tool. And I'm very happy not only that the two of us have met, but that we are doing this podcast.
So yes.
We have tackled it a little bit. So do you think that AI and new technologies, do they already play a role in your work in Sri Lanka with Chrysalis?
I think it does, in the sense that particularly, the way we kind of do our operations will be impacted by this, and the way we program, and also particularly I feel that unless we really understand it more and understand how AI can really support the work that we do. And particularly, I think of women again, right? You know, their businesses and the innovation that they can do will be very, very much supported by AI. We don't know what that will look like for us yet, Andrea. I think we really do need to understand, because we also understand the negative consequences that it might bring for a country like Sri Lanka. So we do need to understand how it's going to work. And I think the work that CARE does in kind of really understanding that in other parts of the world will also help us. But it is taking over many sectors. It is taking over many employment categories in Sri Lanka as well. And we assume that it will get... influence will continue to increase here in Sri Lanka as well. But of course, we will have a disproportionate level of access, because not everyone will be exposed to it, or not everyone will be able to use it in the way that it can be used. So our worry will still be whether AI will actually have the negative influences and consequences may spread faster than the positive ones. So those are the things that we do need to be mindful of. Yeah.
So you have touched on a very sensitive issue, and I think this is very true. I wanted to mention in between that, from my point of view as a neuroscientist, you are super equipped to understand how AI works and how it impacts our way of working and thinking, because this impact should not be underestimated. On this, in the same time, this is something we really have to deal with, because to properly use AI tools, you have to be highly educated or very well trained. And these are things that especially women and girls have not a regular access to in many places in the world, and also in highly developed, so-called industrialized countries. Women and girls in Austria are highly underrepresented when it comes to technical or computer science jobs. So I'm mentioning this to show that CARE has a task in making sure that access is provided, that connectivity is provided, and that people are capable of using AI tools for the benefit of mankind and civil society, because where we find much light, of course, we find many disadvantages and much many negative impacts. But I think as CARE, we should know about both, but we should focus on the ethical and good use of AI. And this would entail that women and girls are trained, have access, and as a basic are connected. One third of the world population, including men and women, don't have access to connectivity. And more than half of the third are women and girls who are not connected. So talking about AI is interesting, but we have to be aware that the digital gap is adding a layer of complexity to the whole poverty discussion and the poverty gap that millions of people are still facing. You are so-called, and for non-NGO staff, this will not be maybe fully understandable, but you are not CARE anymore. You are locally led. And this is something that many organizations favor. And I want to ask you now very bluntly, is it that big the difference to be locally led and not so much connected anymore to a global player, or how do you see it after 10 years? What is your result? What is your take on that?
I have maybe it's a bit of a radical perspective, but I feel that for us to be locally led, what that has really meant is that we seem to breathe easier, that, you know, we control our decisions, right? And rightly or wrongly, we have to then own these decisions. There's no one to blame here. We really have to own these decisions. And these decisions, therefore, has to be truly informed by local realities, truly informed by the aspirations and hopes of these people, the people that live here, the people that work here. So for us, that's been that. But for us, I think as chrysalis, we've never said that We don't want to be a global actor. So for me, some of the concerns that I have about this locally led conversation is, let us not put us in boxes, right? We are locally led, that there is great fortune in that. But we need to be globally connected. And that is why Chrysalis has remained. I think some people ask me, what is the big deal in being connected to CARE, right? And for us, we've always said the big deal is that we want to be part of a global movement, and CARE gives us that opportunity to be part of a global movement. And honestly, when this emergency happened, even personally for me, I knew I could talk to you and talk to, you know, others in the Confederation and say, listen, we need some support. And I think that's the beauty of being connected globally, but maybe led locally, right? I think that's what we are all talking about. So, and I always feel that the problems that we may have in Sri Lanka, you know, maybe the root causes of the farmers and the tea plantation workers in our country is also connected globally. So for the solutions, we can't find all the solutions here. We need to, because this is our problem, and we need to ensure that our voices are being heard, our aspirations are being thought of. But we need to really connect globally to find the lasting solution. So I think we need to get past the rhetoric, Andrea, I feel, because all this labeling about what is globally led and what is globally led, I think it's taken us away from what truly matters. And that is really, you know, a woman's right now impacted by the flood. She's running a business in the tea plantations of Sri Lanka. How do we come together to really, you know, give back her dignity? So that for me, that's what drives Chrysalis, I would say. So our desire to really remain a partner, affiliate of CARE, comes from that point of view, right? Because we have to find the solutions together. And also, perhaps we may have solutions in Sri Lanka that is going to be very valuable for people in Vietnam, in Indonesia, or Cameroon, or wherever we might be. Right. So I think this is the way that we need to look at international development, as opposed to dividing up and putting us in different boxes. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is a political discourse. I mean, there has been unfairness, and there is, you know, inequality in how resources are distributed, and there is a power disparity. But I think the only way to find a solution is if we recognize that all parts of the let's say the Confederation has different values and different added values, let me say, that has to come together to fulfill the same mission that we have. And then really saying, what is the purpose of all of us, international or local? I think that's the conversation that we have to come to, finally.
And we will come to this conversation maybe sooner than you think, Ashika, because I'm a big fan of international collaboration, of joining forces, and what unites us are the human rights and our joint wish to alleviate poverty. This is what unites all of us, not only working in the sector, but only also as human beings, I would say. So. Yeah. I think this was a very good final comment. Ashika, I thank you that you took the time. And yeah, I hope that we will join forces again very soon. And thank you that you were my guest at CARE in Action.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Thank you for having me. As always, it's wonderful to speak to you. And thank you once again for all the support that CARE Austria has provided us during the economic crisis as well. So that went a very long way. We were able to not only provide immediate relief, but also to really support women, young people with recovery. So thank you so much to CARE in Austria, and of course CARE, the entire CARE, and of course CARE Austria, for the support that you have provided us. Thank you.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast by CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about CARE and our projects, visit care.at. There, you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.